The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Glory America, I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm not there today. Mark Davis is back, as he was yesterday, straight out of Dallas, bringing you all the Texas news, indeed the news of America. All the news you need, the analysis you must have, Mark Davis has it at his fingertips, as well as an impressive command of music. Thank you, Mark, for coming in. Take it away.
Thank you, Hugh. Appreciate it. This is not a vacation day for Hugh Hewitt. Is Hugh ever really on vacation? Constantly plugged into global events, national events, and in this particular day, California events. Everybody make sure you do foxla.com, KRLA870.com, proud Los Angeles affiliate, because that is where you can see and hear everything going on with the debate. I need to do something here real quick, guys. I messed up. Hang on a second.
Yeah, he's going to mute.
Yep. Hang on a second. I know where it is. Here we go. So as I do this, hi, Dwayne. How's everything? You doing all right?
I'm doing fine.
Me too.
Too bad there's nothing going on today.
Technology is our friend. And Dwayne and I were texting like schoolgirls yesterday. And so here's what we have. Let's stack them up over LAX or DFW or the airport of your choice. Here's the topical rotation. First of all, Andrew Cuomo. The first bold thing I think I want to say is the report is devastating. It's terrible. Biden calling for him to resign, Pelosi calling for him to resign, at least in the short term and maybe even the medium term. He's not going anywhere. What do you think?
The entire New York delegation has called for him to step down. And he is going to pull the full Ralph Northam. He is going to ride it out, and he's going to dare them to push him out. Now,
exactly right. And
I've
with good reason. He's a protected class. He's a Democrat. I think he stands a better than 50% chance of surviving this. Go ahead, Denmark.
I think you're right. The state delegation in Albany is already moving and trying to work towards an impeachment process. But the problem is, as one of the investigators in the press conference yesterday with Letitia James and a couple other people spelling out what this report entailed, one of the investigators said, look, you can't say no to this governor, because if you do, bad things happen to you.
That's right.
And
that's
so right. he's gonna play hardball, and even if the Albany legislature tries to go after him, he's not gonna sit around.
No, he is not. So I've got a couple of things to bounce off Dwayne, a couple of things to share with all of you. Let me give everybody who's listening right now in the first hour, the very special rarefied air of the first hour, where it's really, really early morning in the East and pretty well middle of the night in the West, wherever you're listening to that first hour of Hugh Hewitt, you know the phone number, 1-800-520-1234, 1-800-520-1234. We have great guests, and we don't have nary a one of them until the next hour. And they are wonderful. Andy McCarthy is going to be on today. Michael Goodwin is going to be on today from the New York Post, talking eviction moratoriums, which is just bizarre. What business is it of government? The relationship between renters and landlords. We'll spend some time on that today. Also, a Boston Globe writer who had a feature that ran this week. When you think about misbehavior in big tech, you think about Twitter, you think about Facebook and their fascist inclinations and whom they kick off willy-nilly. Do you ever think about the tyranny of eBay? eBay, that's where you go to get, bathing suits and dishware and computer parts. eBay is tormenting a couple in suburban Boston because they're in the business of critiquing eBay, and eBay is apparently making their lives miserable. I thought, what in the world? So he'll be with us like 1 hour from now. But right now, Dwayne and I are going to cover a couple of the highlights. And what I want you to do is we're nothing without you. So 1-800-520-1234, 1-800-520-1234. Will Cuomo survive? Should Cuomo survive? Should Chris Cuomo survive? He has this show on CNN, I'm given to understand. I have peripheral awareness of that. And he was on for a full hour and did not mention a word of it. What should CNN have done last night? What should they do long term? And speaking of New York City, there was Bill de Blasio. Hey, you know what? Here, hang on. I got 2 seconds of this. Here is Bill de Blasio. It's vaccine mandates. So hello, ding, 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 talk show gods. Here's Mayor de Blasio.
I want you to imagine the notion that because someone's vaccinated, they can do all the amazing things that are available in this city. It will require vaccination for workers and customers in indoor dining, in indoor fitness facilities, indoor entertainment facilities. This is going to be a requirement.
Okay, now let me give you the brief manifesto, and then Dwayne, take the ball and run with it. And again, everybody come on 1-800-520-1234, 1-800-520-1234. In order, government should never have a vaccine mandate for citizens. That's a given. If it comes from a business, a restaurant, a gym, a venue, Foo Fighters did this massive show at Madison Square Garden just a few weeks ago, vaccine requirement. Packed, happy crowd. People went nuts outside the Madison Square Garden. Screw you, Dave Grohl. I'll never listen to a Foo Fighters record again. They had every right to do that. And we can either like it or not like it and patronize accordingly.
Eric Clapton did exactly the opposite.
Opposite. Say, I will not play a venue that has a vaccine requirement.
And he's got every right to do that.
Absolutely. It's liberty and freedom busting out all over. So here's the problem as I hand you the talking stick back.
Uh-huh.
And that is that if indeed a business, a restaurant, a gym is going to have a vaccine requirement, it should be because they want it and they enacted it and not because the mayor of New York made them do it. Go.
Okay. Bill de Blasio essentially is saying you can't be part of our great New York society unless you can prove you're vaccinated. I'm going to double back to Bill de Blasio, but I want to juxtapose it by playing Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock, who yesterday at a rally said this, cut three.
You will hear the president convey
later. That's not cut three. That's not cut three.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, I know. I know. Okay, well, Raphael Warnock basically was going down the voter ID thing, and that voter ID is the Jim Crow of our time, right?
Of course. Jim Crow 2.0.
And the problem with that is, so in New York, about 67% of New York's black population is not vaccinated.
Thank you.
So Bill de Blasio is basically telling two-thirds of New York blacks, you can't be part of our society unless you can not only prove you're vaccinated, but show ID so that we know that you are who is attached
That's
to this
it.
Vaccine card.
And they think that they're going after MAGA hat wearing rednecks. And again, their characterization, not mine. Are there some folks in, you know, our listener base who are of the vaccine hesitant? Of course. But there's also a ton of rural whites
who
are various politics and in big cities. I've done a lot of the stories here in Texas, Houston, Dallas, El Paso, Austin, you know, San Antonio have enormous populations of color who are unvaccinated.
So Bill de Blasio,
it's not a pigeonholable community.
Right. So Bill de Blasio is demanding ID on steroids, and Raphael Warnock is still thinking that if you have to crack open your wallet and show ID to vote, that's Jim Crow. It's nonsense.
That's it. So there we are. And, what does it look like for Andrew Cuomo I think we seem to share the same space that he is going to at least try to hang on. What are the factors that will actually enable him to hang on? Our short memories, a forgiving Democrat Party? Because you know the Democrats, from Biden to Pelosi to surrounding governors, they're not calling for Cuomo's ouster because they are actually personally repelled by his behavior. Please, he's a Democrat. It's because they know he's a liability.
Joe Biden, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, he is not a different person than he was yesterday. And everybody in the Democratic apparatus knows he hasn't changed a bit since yesterday. They knew exactly who he was 24 hours ago. All of a sudden today, they want him gone because he's a political liability.
You and I run CNN. What do we do for last night's Chris Cuomo show? The choices are A, say, hey, Chris, I know it'll be hard for you, but you must cover your brother's turmoil, or realize that that's just too high a bar and have somebody else guest host the
they
show.
They gave up being an objective news network a long time ago, but last night was over the top egregious. He comes on and he starts out by attacking Ron DeSantis. I mean, honest to goodness, we
That's
actually have
story?
an honest to goodness scandal featuring a governor, a big state governor, and he spends the first 15 minutes going after Ron DeSantis. He goes an hour long, does the crossover at the end with Don Lemon, and just as he's finishing the crossover, there's a one-line crawler at the a chyron at the bottom of CNN saying, "Oh, by the way, Andrew Cuomo was charged today by the New York Attorney General."
Whoops, exactly right. And 30 seconds, and we're out of the segment. Letitia James is that Attorney General. She desperately wants to be governor. She hates Andrew Cuomo. Does that take a little bit of the credibility out of the charges?
He's certainly going to use it, and actually, both can be true. She can be partisan and hate him, and he's still a creep. Both can be true.
It's not binary. It is not a mutually exclusive situation. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, America. Let's go. What are your thoughts on everything we just talked about and maybe some things of your own choosing? 1-800-520-1234. Mark Davis in for Hugh Hewitt. It is my pleasure on what is a very busy day for Hugh. He will be moderating this very evening in Los Angeles, right at the Nixon Library. He will be moderating the debate between a whole lot of the contenders for next governor of California if the Gavin Newsom recall succeeds, which is to say if Newsom fails, if Newsom goes down, then you got a big passel of people who say, hey, make me the successor. And some of them will be on the stage and Hugh will be moderating. You can check it out on audio at KRLA870.com and Fox 11 in Los Angeles, FoxLA.com, FoxLA.com. And that is 6 o'clock California time, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, 9 Eastern, just to do the math. And so I think we exercised just about every angle of the Cuomo story in our first hour, which we needed to do. And we'll get back to your calls about that and about various other things. Every day there's a fresh burst of COVIDs and masks and vaccinations news and things to talk about. But on these days when I'm blessed to come fill in for Hugh Hewitt, I do things in terms of show prep that are just like what I do for my own local show here at 660 AM, The Answer, in the thriving Dallas-Fort Worth. And that is, I look for interesting things that somebody has written, and then I go see if we can find the person who wrote them. And in this particular case, Danielle was able to snag this gentleman because this is simply wild. When you think about big tech tyranny, you know, most of us, especially in conservative talk radio, have talked about the latest person that Twitter dispatched or the latest bias that Facebook has against somebody. But what about the tyranny of eBay? What? The tyranny of eBay? It's where you buy stuff. How bad can they be? The Boston Globe features a story where this couple that did, I guess they did sort of reviews, that their livelihood was doing online reviews of various tech issues, various websites, and they had been not universally, but occasional critics of eBay. And the folks at eBay decided they didn't like it, and there may be retribution underway. Aaron Pressman writes about tech for the Boston Globe and had this story, and it just went straight to my brain. And Aaron, welcome. It's nice to meet you. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you.
This is crazy. First of all, how long have you been writing about tech for the Boston Globe?
The Boston Globe, I'm new. I've been writing about tech for too many years, but I just joined the Boston Globe this summer.
Where'd you come from?
I was at Fortune Magazine for the last
Excellent.
5 years.
And where are your people? Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Boston area, and I never quite escaped, so I'm still here.
So it's right there west of town, about a half hour west of town in the lovely suburb of Natick. Tell me about the couple in question and what they did to draw the ire of eBay.
So Ina and David Steiner, they're an ordinary couple. They like to go to garage sales. And when eBay first arose, they sort of started making a tip sheet for people who wanted to sell on eBay. And it became this big newsletter. They started making a lot of money from advertising to people who wanted to sell things on eBay. So it was a great little business they had. eBay over the years, you may have noticed, has shifted to emphasize more selling from like big retailers and increasing the fees on little guys who want to sell things. Mm-hmm. So the newsletter became, I think, a little more critical over time and kind of got under the skin of some of the top people at eBay.
And where are they? Whose eyeballs would have had to have seen this in order to think this isn't right? We're going to punish these people. Where's eBay headquartered? Is it out in Silicon Valley like everybody else, or where
are
they?
That's right. eBay is out in Silicon Valley, but we know there's a federal criminal case against seven of these people too. So we know, we've seen the emails that the CEO of eBay, right? This is a multi-billion-dollar corporation. The CEO of eBay and his wife are complaining to their underlings about this online newsletter not treating them fairly. And Devin Wenig, the CEO at the time, even has this very unfortunate email where he says, take them down. Take her down, I believe is what he said.
What level of oddity has to happen around the huge mahogany table at eBay headquarters where they decide to take on this level of umbrage at a suburban Massachusetts couple that's just writing reviews?
It's very strange. One thing to keep in mind is this is 2019. eBay was doing very poorly, and a hedge fund, Paul Singer's hedge fund, Elliott Management, had come in, bought some shares, and been very critical. So Devin Wenig, who does get fired later that year, is under a lot of pressure. I think it's also important to keep in mind, like, these small sellers on eBay, this was an important constituency. They all read Ina and David's newsletter. So it was sort of, within eBay, it was sort of an important outlet.
Okay, I can understand eBay reading something that maybe where they feel it's unfair. They feel that like a restaurant where somebody goes and says, you know, the crab cakes are crappy. I mean, that's not good news for the restaurant. I don't think the restaurant's going to come out and get retribution against the reviewer. And I know that's not apples and apples, but what did eBay or somebody at their behest do to the Steiners?
Right. So somehow there's been some kind of, it's a little mysterious, inside the security department of eBay, they have some former cops, a guy who says he's a former CIA, and they get a hold of this anger of the CEO, and they plan this crazy harassment campaign against the Steiners. I could tell you in some details, it's absolutely bananas.
Please feel free.
So first, there's some graffiti on the fence outside the Steiner's house. Then they're signed up for a bunch of unpleasant email newsletters. Then they start receiving bizarre deliveries, live cockroaches, a book, Surviving the Death of Your Spouse, a funeral wreath with the name of one of them on it. Lots of terrible things. Then the security team at eBay decides they need to take the harassment up a level, and some of them travel to Boston, stay at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Boston,
of course,
rent some cars, and start following the Steiners around.
These are crimes. This is, I don't want to ramp up the definition of a term, but this is almost a terroristic threat. If somebody, and you might think it's just kind of a prank. No, imagine somebody doing it to you. Imagine somebody doing this to your wife. This can't stand. This can't happen. So what have there been consequences? How has this played out?
The Steiners, I mean, they didn't know it was eBay. They thought they were going to be killed. They took some photographs of the rental cars that were following them, and the Natick Police Department, the crack Natick Police Department, got on the case and quickly tracked this back to some eBay employees. The FBI got involved. It became federal crime because they're going across state lines. Mm-hmm. Seven people have been charged criminally in the case with criminal cyber stalking and conspiracy to witness tamper because they tried to cover their tracks after they realized the cops were after them. Five people have pled guilty already. Of those people, one was just sentenced the other day. He got 18 months in prison. He was a former police officer who was working in the security department at eBay who helped craft some of the harassment campaign. He was sort of not even the key person. So four more people ready to be sentenced. Two people, the more senior people, are still fighting the charges and could go to trial.
So I have sold a couple of things on eBay in my life. I've probably bought about six things on eBay in my life. I've never had an unpleasant experience. What's the takeaway? Should I now think that these are just horrible people and I should want to be nowhere close to a company that does such treacherous things?
Well, I think that's an individual decision. There's been a wholesale house cleaning. Even the CEO is gone, who was there at the time, and everybody below him who had anything to do with this, they were all fired. The CEO was allowed to resign with a $7 million severance, but all the other people were fired. So I think, you know, it's an individual choice. You have to decide whether does the stench of this terrible act stick with the company when the people depart.
Yeah, unless I suppose I'm in a forgiving mood if eBay is of use to me, and I guess every once in a while they are. Aaron Pressman, Boston Globe tech writer. Let's do two final minutes just on something we could do 2 hours on. What's your take up there in Boston land, Globe land? I'm guessing the readership may not be as torqued as some of our listeners about what Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, are doing to conservative speech. What's your tech writer's take on that?
Well, I think, I don't know if you saw the new book about Facebook. It seems like this is a company that has such broad power to influence the public all over the world, billions of people, and had given very little thought to what might happen when crazy things start to be posted or difficult things to manage started to be posted. And they have been, seems like, very arbitrary in how they've reacted to these things. And now they're in a lot of hot water. I think it'll be interesting to see what Congress wants to do with them going forward and maybe undo some of the acquisitions they've done or limit them in other ways.
And it's funny, I'm a big free speech guy. I believe that, but I don't. This doesn't strike me as First Amendment. I don't think you have a right to be on Facebook. I don't think you have a right to be on Twitter. But I think these people are treacherous in the way in which they cherry pick what they do and don't allow. So my favorite solution, and maybe this is stupid, maybe it's brilliant, is to derive a competitor. Let's do, and I, they got Getter and you got Parler and all those lovely things. That's fine. But if, I wouldn't want to cramp Twitter's ability to make their decisions on what they allow and disallow. Make another platform. With, Lord knows there's the energy and one would think the money. Make a competitor. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as they like to always say, you know, their competition is just a click away. But it is a matter of getting critical mass, right? You know, if everybody's on Twitter, that's where everybody's going to go.
That is so true. And I ain't leaving. Exactly. People say, boycott Twitter. Say, are you kidding me? Twitter needs me. They need me more than ever. You can find Aaron on Twitter at AM Pressman, Boston Globe. Aaron, thank you. Wonderful to have you on the program. Appreciate it. Aaron Pressman, tech writer, Boston Globe. Mark Davis, back in a moment, filling in for Hugh Hewitt on this Wednesday.
Take care of me.
As a Texas talk show host, I feel the certain obligation when I'm hanging here on the Hugh Hewitt Show to bring some Texas tunes, some ZZ Top yesterday for the late Dusty Hill. And we throw you some Whiskey River from 1972. Willie Nelson and Johnny Bush wrote this. Great record. And Willie, an iconic figure. And every once in a while, conservatives here in Texas, we need to be reminded of the greatness of the Willie Nelson Musical Library because he is so politically whacked out. He had an engagement the other day, played some songs, and talked about how terrible the voting integrity bills are, that we're engaged in voter suppression. You just have to remember three things. Willie did some great music. He's 88 and probably stoned. So there's some Willie Nelson. But listen, speaking of iconic people from a very different type, this is a fantastic opportunity. When I fill in for Hugh, I always say, let's see who the best people are that I can get. And Andy McCarthy is always great. I have him on the local show here in DFW all the time, and I'm unbelievably privileged to do that. But the idea was he had written this wonderful piece on National Review about the eviction moratorium, and we'll get to that. But whoops, I think we have another story that has shoehorned its way in. So Andy McCarthy, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Pleasure to have you here, and let's talk some Cuomo first. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Mark. I'm delighted to hear Willie Nelson, but not Stone. So
yeah, no, he's exactly right. It's yeah. Well, listen, it's you've got a column now on Cuomo, and you describe the Letitia James report as a thoroughgoing disaster for Cuomo. Will he survive?
I don't think so, Mark. And I'm really surprised. If I had said that 6 months ago, I think I would have had to check myself in for analysis, but. Just like you feel you have to bring a little Texas to the nation, I think I need to bring a little New York to the nation because we're used to looking at everything through the prism of Republican-Democrat politics. Mm-hmm. And the dynamic in New York is very different. The Republican Party as an institution is negligible here. And the politics are all this divide between the woke left and what passes for the Democratic establishment, and the woke left wants Cuomo out. They've wanted him out for a long time. And that dynamic is very interesting in the way politics gets reported because the media is, when we're looking at national issues, the media is 100%, it seems, with the Democrats. When it's the woke left versus the establishment Democrats, it's very different, and they're very divided. So, you know, Cuomo doesn't have, it looks to me like the president saw the limb out from behind him yesterday. And the interesting weather vane here is Carl Heastie, who was the head of the New York State Assembly, a Cuomo ally, and has been protecting him on all this impeachment stuff. They've had this meandering investigation for months. He did a 180 yesterday and basically said Cuomo was unfit and needs to go. Seems to me if that's where he's coming from, that's bad, bad news for Cuomo.
Why does the woke left, why have they grown weary of Cuomo?
It's not, I don't know that they're so much weary of him, although they think that, you know, anybody who's, you know, slightly to the right of Karl Marx is a fascist, right? So, I mean, that's where they're coming from. But they want his job. You know, the takeover by the Bolshevik left here in this area, and particularly in New York, is nearing completion. I mean, I would say AOC would have been regarded as a joke here, you know, 6 years ago, and now she's an important person. Letitia James, who is the one who has now twice dropped the bomb on Cuomo, she's the attorney general. She first came out with this report about his gross mishandling of COVID in the nursing homes. And then yesterday she really dropped the bomb on him with this report. She's been widely rumored around here for a while as having her eyes on the governor's mansion. And, you know,
and how much does her ambition undercut the reliability of her charges? Does it give Cuomo an opportunity to say, well, look, this is just a woman coming after me who wants my job?
Yeah, you would think so, except that the, you know, there's 11 different women. She brought in these two well-regarded prosecutors, one of whom, June Kim, I overlapped with briefly in the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York. He's got a very good reputation. So she brought in reputable people from the outside to do the report. And then the other thing, Mark, is I think that our politics here, we're a little bit inured to what you just rightly pointed out, in the sense that everything here is electoral office, you know, every judgeship, every DA's office. So we're used to people using their official positions to advance their political ambitions, and I just don't know how much that argument cuts, especially in favor of Cuomo, who before he was governor was the attorney general and used that position to advance his quest to be governor.
I tried to read the report, and I say tried because I just wanted to run off and take a shower. I mean, it is so lurid and so detailed. How much of it is corroborated and how much of it is? Here's the funny thing is I don't instantly believe anybody. I don't instantly disbelieve anybody. I believe all accusers deserve to be heard and then to have their charges evaluated. So how are they, I mean, and it's 11 of them, and it's not all apples and apples. How many of them are really corroborated, and how many of them are just women who step forward with testimony that is obviously compelling, but Cuomo's going to say either A, some of them, if not all of them, are lying, or some just took my intent the wrong way?
You know, Mark, you've hit on something that really is what should be the central issue here, which is that normally when you're dealing with prosecutors or even litigators who are going to file a civil lawsuit, you confine yourself to what you can prove in court. And therefore, you know, you only put into the charging document the things that you're confident that you're going to be able to establish. And that sense of corroboration is very different from what we're dealing with here, which is a situation where Letitia James decided that her job was just to write a report and put it all out there. So you're not limiting yourself to those things that you could prove beyond a reasonable doubt or even by a preponderance of the evidence in court, which gives her a lot of opportunity to put out a lot of stuff that isn't very compelling. Now, I think in the report, there's a lot of stuff that is compelling, but here's what they mean by corroboration. Cuomo does something obnoxious with a woman, whether it's a grope or it's a more commonly, you know, some kind of a comment that's totally obnoxious. The woman gets angry about it and texts a friend fairly contemporaneously. Mm-hmm. They consider the text to be corroboration that this must have happened. And it's not irrational. I mean, the normal person reacts to something like that instantaneously by letting a friend know. But that doesn't mean it happened.
Right.
You know, it's not like corroboration in the sense that we have a tape or we have Cuomo admitting it happened. So you know, the fact that their allegations are not going to be challenged in court means that they're kind of loose with what the notion of corroboration means.
In our remaining 2 or 3 minutes, the great Andy McCarthy is here. Read him, Andrew C. McCarthy on Twitter, and read him in National Review. And before we even got to Cuomo, there was this great column that you had done about the law behind the eviction moratorium. I've asked several times, what in the world is government doing getting involved in the relationship between landlords and tenants? What's your thought on the extension that Biden has attempted to foist yesterday?
It's completely lawless, and he knows it's completely lawless. And the White House came out on Monday and said, you know, look, we've looked at this up, down, and sideways. There's just no legal way to do it. It's like DACA all over again, right? Obama going around 30 times and saying, I can't do this. It's not constitutional, and then he does it. So this is what Biden is doing. He's clearly being pushed into it by the left. They know it's illegal. I agree with you that it shouldn't even be constitutional, in the sense that lease arrangements are mainly intrastate commerce. Mm-hmm. Congress doesn't get to regulate that. It's interstate commerce that the Congress gets to regulate. But even if we're wrong about that, there's no statutory authority. An executive branch agency can't just decree things. Congress has to have given them the statutory authority, which they haven't. And the reason they haven't done that, Mark, is there's not a consensus of support for this around the country, because most owners who lease apartments and property are small business guys. This is not like, you know, Microsoft and Apple and all these giant tech companies. These are little guys who are getting crushed by this moratorium. That's why there's no political support for it.
And if I can take a final 60 seconds and complete an Andy McCarthy column trifecta. Did you write a couple of days ago calling on the Biden administration to just go ahead, and everybody says, oh, these vaccines are experimental, it's just an emergency use authorization. Have you called on the White House to go ahead and finalize the approval?
Yeah, of course. I mean, isn't it amazing? We're waiting on the CDC and the FDA, who are they're bureaucracies. Nobody elected those people. And Biden keeps saying, well, we have to wait for what you're the president. You're the one we elected, you know, the way the Kramers thought this up. We have a unitary executive, because when something is going wrong or there's incompetence in the executive branch, we have somebody to blame for it. So this is all on Biden. They have to get this done.
All right. Last quick take on the law. I don't ever want government to mandate vaccines for individuals. If a business wants to for its own business, that's their right. This de Blasio thing, forcing restaurants to require vaccines, does not pass the smell test to me. What about you?
I think it's bad policy, but I believe the courts are going to give them a very wide berth, Mark. They're relying on this early 20th century case. Called Jacobson against Massachusetts.
Yes. Where this was a forced vaccine. It was a mandatory vaccine. The Supreme Court said, yeah, you can do it.
Yep.
Great. Well, we may need to revisit that for the modern day. Andy McCarthy, always visiting with him is just a joy. Andrew C. McCarthy on Twitter, and just find all the various things he's written of late on National Review, because I think we just about covered all of them. Andy McCarthy, thank you. Mark Davison for Hugh Hewitt. We will continue.
It's Hugh Hewitt taking over to just remind people about AndrewandTodd.com. Andrew Del Rey, Todd Avakian, make up AndrewandTodd.com. That's where you go answer a couple of questions, and they will be right back to you with the best option for the home you do own currently, whether or not it ought to be refinanced, or the one you want to buy, and whether or not you can afford it, and what the rate will be. They have the very best rates. They are lenders. They are not mortgage brokers. They are not a call center. They're actual soup-to-nuts lenders. They walk you through the entire process. Longtime veterans of Sierra Pacific Mortgage, AndrewandTodd.com. Are the people to call, 888-1172. If you need a loan, if you need to unlock the equity in your home by getting a new mortgage, AndrewandTodd.com. If you got to save for college, you're about to pay for it, you need a few $1,000s, and you go to your home and tap the equity, AndrewandTodd.com. Maybe you're a senior citizen who's tired of living on a budget so tight it squeezes. Well, AndrewandTodd.com have reverse mortgages. And if you're a veteran, they do thousands of veterans' loans. AndrewandTodd.com. Andrew Del Rey, Todd
out of Aiken, 888-1172. Call them today. Finally, let me remind you of ReliefFactor.com. Seriously, if you're in your car and you're uncomfortable this morning because it's a long drive, and I used to do that from L.A. every night, hour and a half both ways, and it would always drive my sciatica crazy. ReliefFactor.com didn't exist back then. I didn't know about Omega Resveratrol like Karen and Kirkman, and if I did, I wouldn't have known how much to take. That's when Pete and Seth stepped up and designed for you the very best solution. ReliefFactor.com is the science-based natural supplement solution to that minor ache and pain that bothers you. You're not going to go to the doctor over your back. It's the same back every day. You're not going to go to the doctor over your arthritis. You know you've got it. But you can go to ReliefFactor.com and for $19.95, get the starter pack for 3 weeks and see if it doesn't work for you the way it works for tens of thousands of people every single day. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Believe me, I've got it abroad. I'll bring it back every single day. ReliefFactor.com.
Our today, and then we have the two final days of the Hugh Hewitt time away. Two straight weeks. Boy, Hugh's going to be loaded for bear, topically speaking, when he returns on Monday. And among the stories he will share is what he is up to tonight, moderating the debate of some of the hopefuls who would seek to be Gavin Newsom's successor, a little gubernatorial recall debate. And that starts at 6 Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central, 9 Eastern, at FoxLA.com for the TV station carrying it. And on radio, of course, our proud Salem affiliate in Los Angeles, KRLA870.com. Check that out. All right, we're working our way through a very news-heavy morning. And, you know, a day or two ago, as I'm taking a look at various people I'd love to have on the show, Congressman Jim Banks is an easy call because he's been in the news a lot lately, and obviously tons of congressional things are on the topical burner. But I don't know where Congressman Jim Banks is of better and greater effect, either on this infernal January 6th committee, where he would have served with distinction, along with Jim Jordan, who was also summarily dispatched by Nancy Pelosi. I somehow perceive, and maybe it's because I wanted Republicans to boycott this pig in a poke, I have a feeling that the interviews he's been able to do and the things he's been able to say since being bounced from the committee might have even been of more value. I don't know. Let's ask him. Indiana Congressman Jim Banks. Mark Davis, pleasure to have you on the Hugh Hewitt Show. How you doing, sir?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So what's your thought? I mean, I know you wanted to, I mean, you were having conversations with Chairman Benny Thompson about how to bring some even-handedness to this January 6th dog and pony show. That would have been nice, but I think this committee is collapsing under its own partisan weight, and you've had some things to say about that in the intervening days that might have even been of more value. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's a great way to put it, Mark. I mean, it's obvious at this point that Pelosi isn't interested at all in an investigation. She's only interested in building her narrative, which is a anti-Trump, anti-Republican, millions of Americans who voted for Donald Trump. She wants this all to be about that. She doesn't want to talk at all about why the Capitol was vulnerable on January 6th and what we could do to fix it, to fix the issues at the systemic breakdown of leadership at the highest levels of the Capitol Police, which is a bureaucratic issue. She's not interested in that. She's obviously interested in something else. The American people see it for what it is. I mean, in fact, I don't know if you saw this, Mark, a couple of days ago, Harvard, of all places, put out a poll that showed that 58% of the American people think that this committee is biased to begin with. So to your point, I mean, the committee and the process, the American people see it for what it is. It's a political stunt. It isn't at all about investigating on what happened on January 6th to do everything that we can to make sure that never happens again.
I've heard a number of people phrase this, and I'll try to encapsulate it, that usually a committee has questions and they investigate things and then they yield the answers that they have secured. In this particular case, they have the answers. They have the narrative. They're just looking to solidify it. How long will this drama be allowed to drag? I mean, they can do it as long as they want. Free country for the moment. So how long is this committee going to continue to seethe and wring its hands about this?
I'm only predicting, but the way it's going so far, Mark, you can see this lasting until November of 2022. I mean, for obvious reasons, right? I mean, this is they've made their platform, their agenda in this Congress almost entirely focused on January 6th and again, going after Republicans. And something yesterday happened that was very significant, though. Democrats just got their polling back, and it didn't look good. Sean Maloney, the DCCC chair from New York, calls all the Democrats together and says, hey, guys, we have a big problem. Our messaging isn't breaking through, and Republicans, if the election were held today, Republicans are going to win back the majority. I don't need a poll to tell us that, because when you get out around the country, when you come back to Fort Wayne, Indiana, where I am right now, you feel it. You feel the momentum. The American people know that these Democrats are not focused on what they care about, which is inflation on the rise, record crime waves occurring in cities all over America, the crisis at the border, and then on top of all of that, the anti-Americanism, critical race theory being taught in our schools and shoved on our military. That's what the American people care about, but Democrats are almost exclusively focused on January 6th, and even the DCCC polling is showing that to be the case. So they've rang the alarm bells. They did it yesterday. There's a couple of stories, I think, in Politico this morning about even warnings from Debbie Dingell from Michigan, saying she's the chief messenger of the Democrat Party. They know they have a big problem. I think Mark, to get to the bottom line, their problem is that they're focused on the past. They're focused on January 6th. They're not focused on the future. And there is not a political leader or a political party in the history of the world that was successful by being focused on the past and not being focused on the future. And that's why I have a sense that Republicans are not just going to win back the majority. We're going to win back a big, strong Republican majority in the midterm election in the House. And I think there's a good chance we do it in the Senate, even though all the prognosticators say that can't happen. If this is a wave election, a red wave election, like I feel it, you could see us winning back majorities in both chambers.
I know, and I don't believe in jinxes, and I certainly don't want anybody to get overconfident, but doggone it, it looks like the landscape is laid. I want to talk about a couple of those other things, too, but last thing on the committee, they've been at their devious work for just days, just a handful of days, and they've already vanished into the tapestry. They're already being ignored. They have earned the obscurity that they so richly deserve. To imagine this going on for another month is hard. Another 6 months is hard. You're talking about them still holding some semblance of sessions through November of next year?
Yeah, I don't know that they can keep it up, but they're going to do everything they can to try. I mean, they want this to be a circus. They want nonstop coverage on all the networks like they had last week. And by the way, I created a website. You can go to, Pelosi vetoed me and Jim Jordan from this committee, but I created a website, vetopelosi.com, where you can find more facts about what the real questions are about January 6th and how to help us fight back against Pelosi's political stunts like this.
Very cool. VetoPelosi.com. Nuts and bolts question on this. I think a lot of Republicans, probably Jim Jordan key among them, and Kevin McCarthy key among them, are going to get subpoenaed by this committee. Should those subpoenas be honored or ignored or something in between?
Well, I won't pretend to know how that process works or how it will play out, but it just goes to show that how fake of a process this is. I mean, if this is really about investigating January 6th and what caused it, issuing a subpoena to Kevin McCarthy because he had a phone call at the very end of the day, toward the end of the activities of that day with President Trump, or the same with Jim Jordan, it just goes to show it's not about what they say it's about. I mean, that's not investigating what led up to what happened on January 6th. That's dragging Republicans through the mud and creating political theater.
Last couple of minutes with Congressman Jim Banks. You've got a tweet in the last hour that the House GOP needs to make reforming and reining in the powers of the CDC one of our top priorities when we win back the majority. Let me have you weigh in on that and the notion of the eviction moratorium, because that actually came from the CDC. What is government doing getting its nose in between the relationship between landlords and tenants?
Yeah, it's clearly unconstitutional. In fact, as I tweeted that, I thought, you know, it's what they've done is clearly illegal. It's unconstitutional. I mean, even Joe Biden said, I know this is unconstitutional, but we're going to do it anyway. But we have to rein in the CDC. We have to rein in these agencies where they're led by unelected bureaucrats. If Republicans can't get that done, we didn't get that. We failed at that when we had the majorities in the White House before. We have to make it a key part of our platform when we win back the majority, or we aren't serious.
I'm going to squeeze another minute and a half out of you on infrastructure. As a conservative, we're never looking for things to spend more money on for the most part, but roads, bridges, train tracks, yes, even internet. I get that. I totally get that. But isn't this infrastructure bill a total Trojan horse, a Democrat wish list of opportunities to spend and thrown in with some activism thrown in for seasoning?
Yeah, it's worse than that. I mean, this $1.2 trillion infrastructure deal that's being debated in the Senate, only 9% of it is actually true infrastructure. There's more emphasis in this bill on subsidizing Amtrak and, as Pete Buttigieg puts it, fixing racism in our highways. I mean, that's major emphasis on this bill. But it's also worse than that because Pelosi says this won't pass in the House unless the $3.5 trillion socialism a reconciliation package passes with it. So those Republican senators in the Senate who are allowing this to happen are playing right into Nancy Pelosi's hands to pass something that's even far worse. If you think inflation is bad now, wait until they pass $3.5 trillion plus $1.2 trillion in infrastructure. You're going to see that gallon of milk cost twice as much than what it does at the moment.
Congressman Jim Banks, 3rd District of Indiana, banks.house.gov, the congressional website, at Rep Jim Banks on Twitter. Thanks so much, sir. Appreciate it. Mark Davis in for Hugh Hewitt. Stick around.
Draws the crowd and plays so loud, baby, it's the guitar man.
Not a bad almost 50-year-old record. David Gates and the folks of Bread. Have I done something else with these? I believe I have. Thought I had the speaker off thing here. So I will mess with this while we say hi to Michael Goodwin. It has been a joy to have Michael Goodwin on the program. This is a gentleman who's been one of my favorite columnists for a long time, and it's just a pleasure to have you on to talk. It's funny, as with Andy McCarthy, this was somebody I wanted to talk about other things with and various other things he was writing about Biden, et cetera, but then along comes Cuomo, and bam, here we are. So Michael Goodwin, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Mark Davis filling in. It's nice to have you. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Mark. My pleasure.
So listen, let's go to the story that can't be driven from the room. You've had some things already to say about Cuomo. I'll ask you what I asked Andy McCarthy. Will he survive?
I don't think so. It's obviously going to be a scorched earth policy on his side to try to survive. But in order to survive politically, you need supporters. And I think they're melting away faster than a snowball in hell. And it's because there's no basis on which to support him. You have to either conclude that all 11 women are lying who made these sexual harassment allegations, some of them involving groping, or the governor is innocent. I mean, those are your two choices, and it's his word against theirs. And there are corroborating documents, text messages, emails, witnesses who support the women. His arguments are, well, that didn't happen that way. That's not what I meant. No, I didn't do that. But yeah, that might work with, he said, she said. But when you have 11 of them, and there's a clear pattern, and everybody in Albany says go, I don't see how he survives. I think we'll see public polling. Probably it'll take maybe 2 weeks to get the full public to understand what this report says and the dynamics at work. And I think his polling will collapse. And as I've said and written before, Joe Biden saying that he had to resign would be a very big moment. I mean, that's the head of the Democratic Party. It's not just the president of the United States. Maybe more importantly, it's the head of the Democratic Party. And so I just don't see Cuomo having any significant support either in the political establishment of his own party or in the public at large.
And that is what he has to have in order to have the usual Democrat turn of events, whether it's Bill Clinton, Ralph Northam. Usually it's like, hey, he's a Democrat. We'll find a way to survive. But that's usually when you have the Democrat power structure behind you, the media culture behind you. And it seems Cuomo has neither of those.
Right. And what's interesting, Mark, is that New York now is more of a blue state than it's ever been. in terms of its government. The Republican Party has all but disappeared in the state capital. And so you have, I think, out of 63 state senators, I think 20 or 21 are Republicans. So you have two, and in the assembly, it's even more lopsided. So you have veto-proof Democratic majorities in both houses, a Democratic governor, Democratic attorney general, Democratic U.S. senators, Democratic controller, on and on and on. And so you can't play politics with this. You can't say, oh, it's Donald Trump and Republicans. Oh, it's those nasty Republicans, which would, in ordinary circumstances, lead some Democrats to rally around the party flag. You can't do that here because these are all Democrats who are saying, resign, you dog. And so that's why I don't see Cuomo having a leg to stand on. Now, it doesn't mean he won't try. He is trying to assassinate the character of many of those complainants and trying to ignore others. But it just seems to me that at the end of the day, it is 11 against 1, and which side are you going to believe?
Michael Goodwin is here from the New York Post. Let's pivot from Cuomo to de Blasio, and I need to give you my tiny manifesto on vaccine mandates and then get what yours is and your reaction to what de Blasio did yesterday. Platform one, there should never be a government mandate to individuals for vaccine in the private sector. Businesses, if they wish to require it, I believe they can, and customers and employees can either like it or not like it. But what de Blasio did yesterday, saying that government is going to make restaurants, gyms, indoor performance venues, going to make them require vaccines, that seems wrong. What do you think?
Well, let's go back to just the concept of a vaccine mandate. In fact, New York and many other states have had vaccine mandates for schools for a very long time. I mean, you cannot go to a New York City school mm-hmm. unless you've had the, your child has had the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella series. And so we've already, in some sense, crossed that bridge in terms of public health. And in general, that is not an issue. Occasionally, it pops up as an issue. It was a very big issue in California, where the anti-vaccination movement was significant. In some sections, some schools in the San Francisco area, you had up to 20% of the children who were unvaccinated. I don't support that. I do think that these children cannot make these decisions, and I think that the parents need responsibly to have them in school, and to have them in school in New York, you have to have these series of vaccines. So I am not someone who is vaccine skeptic. I got this vaccine myself as soon as I could, the coronavirus vaccine. And I'm very glad I did. I urge my family and all my friends to do it. Now, let me say there, though, that people who are skeptical, I think, deserve some space in our society. And what I worry about is not that we are encouraging them, but we are trying to shame them, particularly on the left. And so it becomes that, oh, there are all these dumb white Republicans who don't get vaccinated. And then it turns out that actually in most states, it's not dumb white Republicans. It's black and Hispanic Americans.
In big cities.
Mostly in big cities. We have to respect their concerns and their distrust. So it's this shaming of certain groups that I object to. I think I understand people who are skeptical, but I think the government has to keep working to get it done, because I do believe that herd immunity is the answer and vaccination is the answer.
So bottom line, de Blasio, justifiable or not justifiable in making businesses like restaurants and gyms require vaccines?
You know, I have to read the whole order, but I think what de Blasio is trying to do, Mark, is say to people, it's not the mask. The mask can help, but they can't really stop this disease. It's got to be the vaccine. It's got to, people have to be vaccinated. So what he's trying to do, which I agree with him on, is take away this mask mania. Right. That has now enveloped the Democratic Party, and so you've got to wear a mask everywhere. He's saying, look, masks are important, but we don't want anybody to be confused that you can wear a mask and you shouldn't be vaccinated. So I support that idea.
You're so right, and I think it's possible to deliver that message without trampling all over business rights. This is a strange two-faced or two-headed coin for me over the last week or so. I've caught holy hell for saying that businesses absolutely have the right to require vaccines if they wish. Today, I'm sticking up for a business to have the right not to if they wish. So right. I think de Blasio is dead wrong on this, even with noble intent. In our remaining couple of minutes, your Biden column. This is why we called you in the first place. Joe Biden. Let's do a couple of minutes on that. Joe Biden's failing first crisis. I might say crises. How are the opening months of the Biden regime going for you?
Well, you make a good point about plural or singular. I have lumped them all together into one because I think that that is what's playing into, whether it's the pandemic issues, the Delta variant, the open border, inflation, all of these things, I think, are feeding into a sense of crisis, a sense of a loss of confidence. And so I point to this ABC poll, which asks people, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the next 12 months? And in May, two-thirds of people were optimistic. And now only 45% are optimistic, 55% are pessimistic. It's a swing of 20 points since May. And so I think the decline in public confidence in the government, Biden's personal approval ratings have fallen. And this confluence of problems, I think, is creating a crisis of confidence in his leadership. That's how I was trying to frame it. And that he's got to get over this or his presidency will be stalled right now.
And yes, yes, and yes, every point valid. We're not going to have a Republican House or hopefully a Republican Senate and a Republican successor in 2024 unless more people are saying that than just the hardcore conservatives or the center right. We've got to have independents and even some people who kind of hang with the left, not the left, who hang center left, let's say. They've got to objectively look at this and say that what seems to be pro-crime, what seems to be pro-soft borders, what seems to be inept, that it's just not good. Only then can we have success. And well, I'll tell you what, I've totally run out of time. Pardon my yammering. What a pleasure to have you on, Michael. Thank you so much. Thanks for the columns, the great columns that we'll look for you in the New York Post. It is a wonderful thing to have Michael Goodwin on, and it's a wonderful thing to read him in the pages of the New York Post. So check him out. And when we come back, a couple of final bits of audio, one hard to hear, one incredibly inspiring. Mark Davis in for Hugh Hewitt. Stick around.